15 secondi.
Been stuck in the Stone Age. Tradition's killing it, and I think what Red Hook have done well is they've like respected tradition and innovated on it, and it's like it's doing great. It's not the UFC of cycling, man. Like it's wicked.
Lungs are always burning in these races. Like your chest is always on fire.
I love the sensation of blood.
There's nothing else compares, and I think that's what keeps coming back. I'm generally like pretty scared, but it's a really kind of crazy edge that you just can't ever experience anywhere else, so it's what keeps me coming back. Welcome to the Cycling Podcast from Red Hook Milan.
Benvenuti al Cycling Podcast della Red Hook di Milano.
Welcome to the Cycling Podcast from Red Hook Milan.
Welcome to the Cycling Podcast from Red Hook Milan. Scoop!
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast No Breaks in association with Rafa. Check out the Protein Collection, Rafa's range of performance clothing designed specifically for your fastest rides and races. Highly breathable, warm without weight, and cut for speed. The Pro-Team range was developed with the sport's most accomplished athletes and proven in the professional peloton. See rafa.cc.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore and I am with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
We're only here, Lionel, to introduce a special edition of the Cycling Podcast, No Breaks. What's it all about?
Well, anyone who's a friend of the podcast will know that we've been running a series called The Espoir Diaries this year, recorded and made by two young riders called Calvert Churchill and Kira McVitie. They've been keeping audio diaries for us all season while being supported by the Dave Rayner Fund. They've been living and racing in Belgium.
And a very entertaining series it has been, we must say. It's one final episode still to come of The Espoir Diaries.
Yeah, well, podcasting's obviously got into their blood, because a few weeks ago they came to us with an interesting proposal. Well, they wanted to know if they could go off to Milan and make a podcast about the Red Hook Crit.
We should point out that Kira lives a bit of a double life. As well as doing the more conventional road racing kermesses in Belgium for a team over there, she does a lot of the newer, less conventional events as well. And that includes the Red Hook events and other fixed wheel criteriums. But a lot of people will have no idea about this world or even what Red Hook means. What does it mean, Lionel?
Well, I am one of those people, frankly. The idea of racing on a fixed gear bike without any brakes on a road circuit fills me with dread. But that's probably part of the appeal of this whole branch of the sport. Red Hook is actually a neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York, where the first of these no breaks criteriums took place 10 years ago now, March 2008. It was organized by a man called David Trimble, basically with no greater sense of occasion than being something to celebrate his birthday. He was really into this kind of, unauthorized style of racing. And so he put on the first Red Hook Crit, and it was won by Casey Madderfield. She beat quite a small field. And the second year, the event had grown quite significantly, and the growth has been continuous over the past decade. And there are now men's and women's races in the series that has branched out to Milan and then Barcelona and then London. And the whole thing combines the spirit and bike handling skills of the cycle courier world with the craft of track racing and the speed of city centre criteriums. And as I say, it's been growing up fast. They've even had a positive dope test, you know. A rider tested positive for EPO at the Milano Criterium 2 years ago. I think it's a bit of a cliche to say that it's a world of impressive facial hair and tattoos, and there's got to be much more to it than that. But there's also no doubt that the rest of the cycling world is really starting to take notice. Last year, Bahrain Merida's rider, Ivan Garcia Cortina, who'd just ridden the Vuelta a few weeks earlier, won the Milano event. And this year, a very famous name was on the start list in Milan, Miguel Indurain. Not the five-time Tour de France winner, Miguel Indurain, but his son, Miguel Indurain. Anyway, with the recent announcement by EF Education First and their sponsorship with Rafa, and the suggestion that they will be branching out into all of these different areas of the sport, we thought it would be the perfect time to try and find out what the Red Hook Crits are all about.
Well, I was at the fixed wheel crit in London last year as part of the London Nocturne, Lionel, and Ignacio Moser, Francesco Moser's son, was riding that. So there are some famous names taking part, and I know that, you know, people like Daniel Oss, he's certainly been there and shown an interest in it. So there is a bit of overlap and crossover. Obviously, you and I are way too old for this.
Speak for yourself, Richard. Speak for yourself.
We reacted very positively to Calvert and Kira's suggestion. I thought it would be an interesting thing to find out a bit more about, lift the lid a bit on this world that we don't know too much about, but we're quite interested to find out more. But before we go over to Milan and hear from the event itself and some of the people taking part and behind Red Hook, let's hear what Calvert himself made of it. I should warn listeners that this episode contains some fruity language, not very much, but enough to offend if swearing offends you, or if you're listening with children.
I'd say it was a pretty full-on sensory experience, to be honest. There was a lot going on pretty much from the moment I arrived. I think we went to the Vigorelli track day first, which was sort of a full-on... It wasn't even any racing involved, to be honest. It was like a big media day, a lot of posing going on. But it was all sort of people catching up, people hanging out, that kind of thing. But the racing itself, I mean, the crowds were infinite, but it wasn't like a normal race crowd. There was a lot of people there who weren't just there for the cycling or the racing itself. There was a lot of people there who were there for sort of to enjoy the culture of it, more say. And the other thing was there was a lot of Instagram people there, so like influencers and that kind of thing.
I like it, Instagram people.
I mean, because the whole event in that sense is pretty Instagrammable, so that's really what Red Hook is. I think a lot of it is the spectacle and the sort of the nature of it is that it's very visual.
It sounds a little bit different, Calvert, to a road race or a kermesse in Belgium.
A lot different, yeah. It certainly doesn't held on by tradition whatsoever. It's sort of going against the grain in every sense of the word. So it's one of those where it's a completely different crowd. Not only, you know, there's all these creatives there, those Instagram type people, the racers themselves, although some of them are professional, a lot of them are just there to have a good laugh and a good crack. You know, no one's really trying to take it too seriously. And if they are, then they're sort of ousted out in that sense.
And how's the racing structured?
There's three qualifying rounds for the men and then two for the women. So the top 20 of those qualifying rounds go straight through to the final. And then it's only the men who are given the last chance qualifying rounds to come back with. But that's just simply because of the difference in the numbers in the field. So they're just in the case of Milan, there was just more men on the start line than there was women, so that's why they were given the last chance. And then in that last chance race, the top five, I think there was two last chance races, the top five from those then went through to the final. So I think in the men's race you're looking at almost, would have been 90 riders almost on the start line there. And then from that as well, they also had championship points that they're all vying for, and those championship points were then scored not only in the qualifying rounds but the final as well. So every race sort of counted in that sense. And then they all sort of went on through to the final, and then that's where the racing really kicked off and the speed increased and it really got going.
Can you tell us about, you know, some of the other people you spoke to in Milan who we're going to hear from in this episode?
Yeah, I spoke to a guy called Ben Joseph, who's one of the more interesting guys. He was the first Indian Red Hook racer, and he was also... it was his first time in Red Hook himself. He'd done a couple races back home in India, but had been banned from racing on his fixed gear bike within the road races, I think, for sort of quite obvious reasons. But also, it was interesting to see how he found his place within the fixed gear scene. And he obviously felt a lot more comfortable racing, doing what he loved within that. I also spoke to Ida Schelling, who races for the SEG development team. And what was interesting about him was that the team actually allowed him to do it, because I know riders previously from other professional teams have banned their riders from doing it, which sort of ties in quite nicely, I think, with what EF Education have announced, opening up the events to look to do more events and that kind of thing. And I think that possibly could be the future of it, where you may see more professionals, World Tour, Pro Tour, Continental possibly doing these events like Red Hook Crit.
And we're going to hear, I think, from the man who started all quite early in the episode, aren't we, from David Trimble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David Trimble was actually really interesting to listen to from the beginning, because he started the event basically as his, the beginning of the event was his birthday party, and then they came on to expand it year on year to eventually open it up. But it's always kept that messenger sort of renegade sort of alternative feel to it. But it was interesting speaking to him as he explained what it was and how he set out sort of the goals and how it became more professional in time.
Great. Well, without further ado, Calvert, let's cross back over to Milan and hear about the Red Hook there and who you spoke to.
Righto. So you started Red Hook Crit by yourself for your birthday, I believe.
Yes, I did.
For your 25th birthday. Now it's grown into 29 events, am I correct? Or
this is the 29th.
Yeah. Did you ever expect it to grow into this community that you've almost created around it, so the fixed gear racing community as it was?
Yeah, I mean, initially I had no ambition for it, just doing it for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, once I was, you know, able to get a major sponsor, Rockstar Games, and turn it into a four-race global series, the idea was to kind of turn it into a Formula One of cycling. And having all these cyclists from around the world, all 30 different countries, I think that's, you know, its goal accomplished.
I think you had quite a big nod this year in the Tour de France with them and just using the gridding system at the start of the stage. I mean, you've seen a lot of that transfer from professional cycling into this. And would you say that this is a best of both worlds situation where you've still got the serious racing, but you can still have a great community around it?
Yeah, it's kind of a border. Like I mentioned in the press conference earlier today, it can either kind of stay where it is and stay a community event and stay, you know, really fun. It's not a professional sporting event at this point. It's still amateur, even though people care a lot about what happens in the race. There is a path that where it becomes very professional with a lot of money in it. And if that ends up happening, people are going to look back at this era as like the golden years. I think both directions are good for the race. Just see what happens. See where the world takes us.
Yeah, I'm a bike messenger, so I've come from street racing. My name is Matt Watson, and I race with One Life Cycle. I think the Red Hook Crit is like a supercharged Alley Cat. That's how I would describe it. It's basically like a really crazy Alley Cat, super fast. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that say that it's becoming more professional, and that's not good. I think if it can be kept in the format of the Red Hook Crit, where anyone can enter, I think that's really important, because I think it should be encouraging people to be able to enter events like this. But yeah, I mean, as far as it getting faster and more pro, I just say the people that cry about that need to train harder.
That's a good response. But do you still feel like it retains some of that messenger style, that sort of vibe about it in some ways, or not?
This race, yes, Red Hook Crit, because of because of how it started, and David, you know, David still hacks around in Alley Cats, I know, in New York and that. So for me, this race is very special and unique in that way. Other fixed crits, not so much. I think it's more, it's not so much like that. But Red Hook Crit, yes.
I'm just trying to rock bandanas for style, not like look like I'm a gangster. That's why I wear white and black bandanas, because there's no white and black gangs. It just looks cool. Not like, oh, you got a red bandana, you blood? I'm like, no, dog, I'm just rocking a red bandana. I'm not trying to play that. I just need to stock up on white and black bandanas, I guess.
So, right, you're racing in Holland at the moment?
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that going for you?
Trying to race in Holland. Yeah, it's going good, man. It's, fuck, it's next level. Yeah. Racing against the guys in the World Tour is pretty, like, whoa. Okay.
And I know you did a bit of Kermesse racing in Belgium back in the day, because I think I might have done a couple races
for
you as well.
For sure, yeah.
So like, how was that? Like, how's that compared to this?
I could win any Kermesse I want now.
Yeah.
This is the level that I'm at now. It's just like, you get to 120K into a race and you're like, got 80Ks to go.
Yeah.
Like here, I'd be sprinting like that.
Yeah.
I feel fine.
So is it like stepped up the level for you? Or?
Yeah. Oh yeah, my body, my mind, my ability, my everything.
So you do almost the whole Crit series through the year in Europe and the States, or do you focus in Europe
been home
so much?
Since. I've only went home for his event, Brooklyn. But I do Fix Italia, and then I do NL Crit series, and then I race the European UCI Tour. So it keeps me pretty on my feet.
Obviously, this has been like the inception of crit racing or fixed gear crit racing, but obviously it's come a lot on from that. And so you have the Dutch crit series and things like that.
It's good. It just keeps you sharp.
Yeah.
You know, of course, any race you attend is not going to be Red Hook level.
Yeah.
But it's still good and it's still hard. And you still suffer. So
Yeah.
I've never finished a race and been like, oh, it's easy. You know, even if I win, I suck though fucking pretty damn hard.
Yeah.
I'm pretty fucked at the end of a race when I win. If I'm dropped.
We interrupt the Cycling Podcast No Breaks to bring you a commercial message. Thanks to Harry's Razors for supporting this episode. We have a trial set available for listeners. Details coming up. My trial set is in the post, Richard. You're a Harry's Razors user. Can you tell us more about them?
Of course, Calvert. I've been talking about Harry's Razors all year because I've been using them all year. I noticed, though, before I do, you've been cultivating a beard. Is that you trying to fit in with the Red Hook set?
It's a bit of me trying to fit in with the Red Hook set, but I was warned by one of the old club mates the other day that I looked like I started riding a trike, so I think it's time for me to shave it off.
Great, well, that Harry set can't come soon enough for you then. Harry's Razors, which I do highly recommend, include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, a weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel and a travel blade cover.
You can get started shaving with Harry's Razors today by claiming your trial set for $3.95. Support the Cycling Podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, foaming shave gel and a travel blade cover. You can do all of this by going to harrys.com/cycling right now. That's harrys.com/cycling.
I started as a triathlete, got into the fixed gear races, a race series out in Montreal called the Toonie Crits. Yeah. Then I came to Milan last year for my first big fixed gear crit. I'm Evelyn Sifton. I'm an independent rider, but I'm guest riding for the Meteor HLA. And then it's funny because I got into road this season just because we don't have enough events in Canada if I wanted to get that big pack experience. So I got into road because of fixed gear. So it's the other way around. So I started off racing fixed gear, but because there was no way to get that big field experience that once I went to Milan last year, I learned I needed, I was like, shit, I need to get a road bike and start racing these road races. So I am, I think, as far as I'm aware for Red Hook, I am the only out transgender athlete in the series. And whereas in road, I've definitely had some people who've taken issue with that. Fixed gear, everyone's chill. Everyone's, you know, there's a more alternative vibe. There's a more accepting, more liberal mindset. So just, everyone's just generally cool
in here. Rockstar Games Top Antagonist Award to the rider who's most aggressive puts on the biggest show.
Well, I mean, let's get to basics here. What sort of bikes do they ride? They're obviously fixed wheel bikes, but are they standard track bikes or are they customized for the road?
A lot of them all are standard track bikes. But in the terms of teams like Specialized, Rocket Espresso and the Sinelli team, those bikes are sort of have been designed specifically with Red Hook in mind. So I know Specialized had a bike where it was sort of reinforced and aluminium, and obviously they're all painted up as well specifically for Red Hook Crit. So it's there is bikes there that you would probably wouldn't want to really ride on the road from the track, but there's bikes there that are quite specifically designed for it, and the positions are there where they're certainly with track racing in mind. And that's, you know, for instance in the length of the crank, so a lot of them are riding really, really short cranks just to be able to get around the corners without touching the pedals. On top of that as well, I think the bars and the stems that they use, a lot of them were talking about how stiff and how much they wanted it to react to it, and you probably wouldn't find the positions or the same kit you'd find on a track bike as you would on a Red Hook bike.
So I am riding the Hexagon Mint frame set. It's a small company out of Montreal. Actually, my bike's almost all Canadian. My wheels are Woven, which is a wheel builder based out of Ottawa, so my hometown. And then I've got it set up with Omniums and Shimano Pro components, courtesy of Joe Mama Cycles.
Okay, we are the Cinelli team, and this is Paolo, Barbara, and Alessandro.
Just to set the scene a bit, you're all in white tracksuits.
Yeah, our new ice cream suits.
So we're at one of the fastest tracks today. What sort of gearing are you using at the moment?
I will be using a 49-14 or a 50-14, depending on my legs.
Yeah. And can you run me through the rest of your bike as well? Like, what's your setup that you usually run on your bike?
Normally I use a 48 or a 49-14 is my usual set.
Yeah.
Because I know very well this kind of radio. So.
So, a De Vere bike. Track bike. It's just a standard track frame.
And De Vere Cycles is
in London. It's they sponsor us. Traditional track frame. I've got a SRAM Omnium cranks. I also run that on my street bike, which is a bike called Made by Kingdom, which is that white one. So that's what I ride on the street. But I've got SRAM Omnium cranks. I've got DT Swiss wheels. These strong Dita handlebars. I tend to have quite a long stem because I think my upper body's longer than my legs. But it's just solid and simple. I mean, I think track bikes are very beautiful things because of the simplicity. And also, you know, you've got to pay your dues to be able to ride one as well, because you can't just jump on and ride. And I think that's like what a lot of the sort of more sort of pro guys that are coming from the track struggle with is the technical aspects of the race. But this race is super fast, and you know, there's no like hairpins or anything crazy. So it's like I'm running 50-14, which I've never run. Like last year I ran 49-14, but this I think 50-14. It's probably a better gear, but we'll see. I'm starting back in row 8 in my heat, so I'm going to have to clip in super fast if I want to get into the final.
And if there's one thing that would keep you coming back to Red Hook Crit, but fixed gear racing in general, what is that? What
keeps me going?
What keeps you going?
Well, the thing is, we have a team that we run, and we set it up. We're heavily involved with the community, with at-risk youths. For us, the whole idea of setting up our team was to be able to give back to the community, because we come along and we saw, you know, everyone walking around and posing, getting pictures taken and that, and I'll be straight up with you, I think that's complete bullshit. For us, it's about, of course we take our racing serious and all of that, but we don't try not to take ourselves too serious, and it really is about putting back into the community. So that's what keeps bringing me back, and even like when I step away from racing at this sort of level, I'll still be running the team. So for us, it's about getting people into cycling because of all the health benefits, and you know, it is a pretty big worldwide community that's going to continue growing. So that for us is the most important thing.
I cycle since I was younger, so I do it for a long time, but not the competitions. So yeah, this year I actually started, and also with fixed gear. Yeah, it's cool. So I'm Lise Visser. I'm from the Netherlands, and I don't have a team because it's my first cycling season and my second crit. So it's a big one in the beginning. I'm riding in Lichello. It's a Dutch, brand. it's not very popular, but I like the colors, and I can use it for now.
What do you like most about fixed gear racing at the moment?
The speed is very fast, and it's just a short short race, so that's what I like, and the atmosphere, of course, that's what it's all about. It's, road cycling is my main thing, and when I have some free weekends, I will do fixed gear. And maybe if I am having some road crits in the Netherlands, I will skip it for fixed gear.
So you've just done the qualifying rounds. How did that go?
That was good. It was at first the rain wasn't so much, and then it just consistently started to get more slippery and more slippery. So it was a bit hesitant and a bit cautious, and everyone was kind of on edge. And some guys are willing to take more risks than others.
Does that slow it down and make it a bit more twitchy?
I took the initiative to slow it down to kind of just waste energy on the front to stay safe,
So I dictated the speeds, and whenever I felt like a surge coming, I would just jump and then get to the corner first and slow it down again. And then in the final last lap on the backside, I got passed by one guy, and then coming through the sort of finish line, or the last corner, I didn't want to crash. So I let the gap open a little bit, and then one guy got past me and I finished third, so it's okay.
So talking about the risk, especially in the qualifying rounds with the points, they actually matter quite a bit with the change in the point system. To the overall standing of the team, do you feel like you're easing off a bit more in the rounds, or still trying to go full gas each race?
No, for sure. I mean, you have that in the back of your head, like, you know, you always want to finish the best you can finish for every reason. But I mean, if you crash in the qualifying, you're going to be less of a value or an asset in the final. So you can maybe like lose more to make more. You know what I mean?
And just talking quickly about training and how you warm up. How are you warming up for each of these events? Does it differ greatly from how you do anything else? Or?
Yeah, I mean, because you don't want to go so deep, but you also don't want to be closed off. I spend about, you know, 10 minutes just turning the pins. And then I do a really hard 1 minute effort, recover fully from that for about 5 minutes. And then ride like 2 or 3 minutes at sub threshold. And then cool down. So.
That'll keep all the cycling geeks happy for a moment.
Yeah, I guess. Warm-up's a warm-up, man. Yeah, just pedal
exactly.
Your bike.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no power meet. There's not really any power numbers. So it really is getting back to that feeling of just racing for racing sake and your body as well.
Yeah, especially. Exactly. I mean, like, even like racing, you don't look at numbers when you race. You know, like, I'm never trying to be like, oh, I'm doing 450. Like, this is good. Like, no, like, the wheel in front of you, keep it. If that means 600 watts, you ride at 600 watts. If you're at 800 watts, you're at 800 watts. And there's a gap, you ball your balls off. Like, you only train with numbers. You actually only recover with numbers. I mean, if you're really smart about it.
I didn't have a bike sponsor this year, so I kind of put everything together last minute. And so I actually bought this bike and stripped it and painted it for everybody. And these are, like, just stuff I had over the years from racing, other things being sponsored. But I mean, it's nice because you don't really need a ton of stuff, and I'd rather like kind of be sponsored by a few brands I really care about, so we don't have to just like spend all of our time on social media like being like, thanks for the saddle, thanks for the bars, like all these people, because yeah, it's not just about advertising, it's more about racing and
And I've noticed that a lot with everybody else, and it's sort of bringing it back to maybe even what it was traditionally as a sport, is that because the bikes are so simple, it really is caring about the tire pressure, it really is caring about your gearing, and then even the simple things like raising the bottom bracket and things like that. Is that something you enjoy within it as well, like that side of the things, and the fact that it is so simple?
Oh yeah, I love it that it's simple, for sure. And then also because when you do all this traveling, this is an aluminum frame, so you just take it apart, like throw it in a box, like it's way easier to pack it, deal with it, carry it around, it's lighter. Yeah, you don't have to worry about like gears or anything like that.
So we're live and direct from Bovisa.
See,
which is track sensor. We're currently inside what I'd describe as the pits at the moment.
Yes.
Everyone's
lots of hustle and bustle.
Yeah, everyone's set up. You've just signed on and you've got to go and get your bike check. So what is involved within the bike check?
Essentially, they just check your cleats, that they're not worn. They check your tyres. They check that your gear is not going to, you know, they check your lock rings tight, that kind of thing. I mean, there's not really a lot that can go wrong on a fixed gear bike, but it's just simple stuff like making sure your chain's not loose and that kind of thing.
It's like keeping you and everybody else safe, basically.
Yeah, I think it's more of a health and safety thing than a necessity, but you know.
And then what usually happens now, do you go out for a sighting lap or that kind of thing?
So at 11:30, so in like 10, 15 minutes, the track will open. So people will go have a look at the course. I think this is going to be my fifth Milan. So I've done the course before. They don't change it because it's the only Red Hook that's purely in the street. So yeah, they can't actually change the course.
And you said earlier it was, your 15th Red Hook in total?
My 15th. I counted them up the other day and I was like, wow, I've been doing this shit too long. But yeah, it's I love it. Milan is one of my favourite. It's got a real nice atmosphere here. And I don't think it has the biggest crowds. I think probably Brooklyn does, but because it's in such an intimate environment, it always feels like the biggest crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's because it's literally in the street. Yeah, I just love it. So, yeah, we'll go have a sighting lap, and then we will be lining up for heats.
what you do is you do a mini race, and essentially your positioning in that race dictates where you end up in the grid for the final event. And obviously you want to get a good qualifying position, because being at the back at crit start is not good. Everyone's clipping in, they're doing 1,000+ watts out of the gate, and you do not want to be at the back. So yeah, it's all about positioning going into the final event, but also saving your biscuits as well. You don't want to be completely dead by the time you get to the main race. So it's kind of a fine balance.
So if anyone thinks it's simple and a Mickey Mouse sort of game, it's not at all.
No, there's definitely a lot of tactics. Yeah. And since I've been racing Red Hook, I've noticed the team element has come into it a lot more. It used to be a lot more individual riders, and the qualifying used to be a fastest lap. And now that it's a race, I think it makes it better for qualifying, particularly for me, because one fast lap isn't really my forte.
No.
But yeah, there's a really interesting team dynamic within a qualifying as well that wasn't necessarily there when I started. God knows how many years ago. 5 years ago now. Five! What?
There was like a part in the first year with the messenger, with the cutted jeans, not skin suit, and now is a totally professional race.
Yeah. And since the start, have you noticed that it's become more competitive as well with the teams?
Yes. I grow, but also the level in general grow.
Would you say you now find it harder? The racing,
faster and faster and faster.
I think this is going to be my 8th start, I believe. My name is Alvin Escajeda. I race for Endo Concept Team. We're from Los Angeles. But the first one I did was in 2013, and at the time it seemed like, you know, there was a couple of guys that were really, really good, and there's just a bunch of other guys that like just started riding. Like at the time, it was my first actual real race, and I qualified. And that doesn't work out anymore. You know, you have to actually be some kind of elite level athlete at some aspect, or just like really talented. So the level has gone up. You know, if you make it to the final, you're a legitimate athlete, I think. So at some level, I think it's gonna always be accessible. I think there's only a certain level that it's gonna get to. Obviously, it's gonna keep getting higher and higher and higher and more professional. But I think there's always gonna be that aspect of like, anyone can enter, and you know, I think that's what makes it such a special event. You know, you could be, obviously last year people were racing Eamon Cortina, who's a World Tour rider, and there's guys that, you know, first year racing and they're out there with them sharing the same track, and that's pretty amazing.
I'm Sammy, and
I'm Sammy,
and I race for myself.
There you go, brilliant.
One of the things why I'm racing with the t-shirts, because we started really racing with like jeans and t-shirt and Red Hook, and it became so professional that people are taking it serious, that they don't enjoy the moments of like free parties, and they don't enjoy like hanging with the other family, you know. And it's like, why this is the thing that doesn't have to die. So like racing with a t-shirt makes like just see people that it doesn't have to take it so serious. And that's why I'm not gonna win, but you know what I mean. It's just like the fact of like, just keep it easy.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of the cycling podcast is sponsored by The Economist. Now, I am quite happy to admit that before The Economist started sponsoring the cycling podcast, I assumed it was about economics and finance and not really for me. And in my weeks of reading The Economist regularly now, I've discovered that it covers so much more than just those two subjects: politics and business, science and technology, the arts, and even sport. But it takes a certain look at these stories that is different to kind of the daily newspapers, I guess. The Economist helps readers prepare for what is going on in the world around them, and in today's dynamic world, facts matter more than ever. For over 170 years, The Economist has delivered trustworthy intelligence that helps people like you, our listeners and me, choose where to stand on the issues that matter most. Now, Richard, it was your job this month to find an article that caught your eye. What leapt out?
Yeah, I've been reading the magazine Lionel as well as checking the app. And I actually signed up for my free copy through the Cycling Podcast offer and then paid for another 12. It was quite an awkward call arranging that when they asked if I was a regular listener to the Cycling Podcast. But anyway, one thing I've noticed reading the magazine is that though that you do get the usual diet of quite depressing stories about all the things going on in the world. There's a sense of optimism as well in a lot of the stories in terms of the tone and really putting things in context. But there are also optimistic stories that I find in The Economist, which I don't necessarily find elsewhere. For example, On the Plastic Highway is a recent story about recycled plastic being used to make roads. There's far more plastic around than bitumen, which is a byproduct of refining oil. And that's the stuff that they use to bind together rocks and stones to make roads. But it's a polymer just like plastic. And last month, a bicycle track opened in the Netherlands made from 70% recycled plastic, literally a prefabricated plastic road, which is made off-site and taken and put down. This bike track in the Netherlands is only 30 meters at the moment, but they reckon it'll last 2 to 3 times longer than conventional roads and cost an awful lot less. There's another method of using recycled plastic to make roads, and that's mixing it with bitumen. It's something that a British firm already does, and there's a road like this in Cumbria, which they say needs resurfacing far less frequently, and it's far cheaper, and it's using up some of that the plastic that we've got, and we don't really know what to do with much of it. Ends up, of course, in landfill. So an optimistic story there, an encouraging story whereby the plastic that we overproduce, some of it at least, may end up making roads that are hard wearing and cheaper.
It makes me wonder, in the future, will Alpe d'Huez or Mont Ventoux be made of plastic? And if so, will the surface melt in the baking hot temperatures
of July? I'm sure they've thought
of July.
That. Why not? I'm sure they've thought of that.
Well, the current surfaces melt, don't they? And you get sticky corners and bits that dribble back down the road. I mean, you know, it's an important question, Rich. Anyway, The Economist is a smart guide to the forces changing your world. And to get a free print copy, you can text the word cycling to 78070. That's cycling to 78070.
I mean, you've been around the road racing scene a lot and done some of the big races. How impressed were you by the standard of, you know, the top riders at Red Hook?
The top riders, I'd say I was really impressed by, because I think they acquire like a certain set of skills that you wouldn't necessarily find in road racing or crit racing themselves. And a lot of those riders that were vying for the top 20 have either been professionals on some level, whether that's, you know, pro Conti domestically or even at a high amateur level. And that all sort of came to the fore. So really what you saw was like a strong bike rider was always going to be a strong bike rider. And I think you see that especially in the Red Hook teams is like specialised and so on with the riders like Gus Morton and Eamon Lucas, who have both raced at quite a high level, and their talent sort of shown through quite obviously in the racing, and that was able to all come to the fore within the racing.
Yeah, I mean, like, exactly that. Like, I've grown up racing a bike. Hey, my name is Angus Morton, and I ride for Specialized Rocket Espresso. That's kind of the only way I knew, like, a bike to be was kind of road racing and that traditional way of things. And then over the last few years, I've noticed the Red Hook crew's kind of gaining popularity, and I was always a bit, to be honest, like, a bit afraid of them. And then when I stopped racing full-time last year, the guys who specialised kind of said, do you want to maybe give Red Hook a go? And I was like, it'll be a bit of fun, but I was kind of not really, like, thinking about it or seriously kind of considering it. And then when I did my first race earlier in the year in Brooklyn, I was, like, instantly hooked. Like, it was incredible. It was like, yeah, I wish I had found this, like, 10 years ago. I wish I had been here from the beginning, because I think this, for me, is... There's far more racing in this than there is in current road cycling. Like, it's the racing element's gone out of it. It's become too scientific. It's become too physical. Too much about, like, what is your body technically able to do. Whereas this is like, you know, how good are you at cornering? How good are you at positioning yourself? How good are you at, like, thinking about tire pressure and gear selection? Like, all of this sort of stuff that's brings a bit more of that, like, personality back to it. You know, like, yeah. It's about getting out there, going elbow to elbow, toe to toe, and competing against each other. And it's exciting, you know, and that's what I think makes this event, you know, I hope that this becomes the future of what the sport is. I think it should do, I think it can do. So we'll see. But yeah, for me, this is right now, this is where bike racing is. The UCI should have people here watching this. Yeah, but of course they don't, because they're dinosaurs. But this is what, like, they should, like, race organizers, like, they should franchise me down here. You know, I mean, they had a grid start this year. Like, where do you think they got that idea from, you know? And which is amazing, because it shows that, you know, one of the biggest sporting events in the world is taking notice of this, like a grassroots event that's growing and has grown.
Do you have a wipe?
And yeah, I think that I think more events should come down and watch this sort of stuff, and hopefully this can go more mainstream. And if they do it in the right way, I think it won't lose the heart of it, the racing element. I mean, it's got all the ingredients here that will keep it that way. So I enjoyed racing as a professional, like, because it was a challenge, and I had sort of like some goals that I wanted to achieve, and I was doing it with my brother. And then once we sort of, like, he went on, and I sort of was realized that I'm not good enough to get to that next level, I was like, there's nothing fun about this for me. There's no, like, the challenge is not something I want to be challenged by. Whereas this, I didn't think I would enjoy it. Too, I love it. Like, yeah, I kind of want to, like, properly dedicate a season to it, yeah. and actually train. Like, you know, I haven't ridden my track bike until like a couple of days ago. I haven't raced since Red Bull, like any form of racing, you know, because I've been doing, I've got a job that I have to do. So, you know, so yeah, I hope that maybe next year I can dedicate a bit more time to something like this.
I mean, again, that leads me on to the next question. It's like, do you see maybe your future in racing within these fixed gear kits?
Yeah.
Or like, your future in cycling sort of in general?
Yeah, like, I totally, like, I'm not ultra competitive anymore. Like, I don't sort of have that desire. But then when you get around, like, the team we have here, is a really good group of guys, a really exciting, like, group that really embrace all of the, like, tactical elements and all these things that make this part of the sport really unique. And so, yeah, I mean, I hope I can kind of, if I organise myself right, I can, you know, block out a bit of time to train properly and that. So let's see.
So this is a fair day out for you.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Big day. My name's Ben Joseph, and I'm from Atticus LBB Racing Squad, and I'm from India. From Bangalore.
And how many Red Hook crits have you done, or are you brand new to it?
This is number one.
Number one?
Yeah.
Have you done much traditional racing back home before?
So I started off racing on fixed gear. Like, I used to compete with roadies on my fixie.
Wow.
Until they banned me. And yeah, then I started racing road bikes. Not too much, just getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done one fixed gear crit back in Dresden. This is basically my second proper fixed gear crit. Compared to, like, the cycling scene in India, this is phenomenal. This is huge. And yeah, definitely open. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's no prejudice. You go to traditional racing, I think it's completely different. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. able to do one thing. Here you ask somebody for help and they'll just help you out, you know, chain ring or whatever. So mm-hmm. it's good.
I'm Jan-Willem Lok. I'm a race organizer of the NL Crit Series. That's a fixed gear competition of the Netherlands. We organize like 10 to 12 races, fixed gear races a year. Of course, Red Hook Crit exists in 2008, and I came across it like in 2014. And I figured, yeah, it would be nice to have a fixed gear race in Netherlands. So, like, yeah, it was only one race at that time. Mm-hmm. But I thought, yeah, we could do a competition, and there are a lot of fixed gear racers. And maybe we can attract more people who like it, who want to be involved in the sport, who want to, yeah. So that's why we, in 2015, beginning of 2015, we founded the NL Crit Series. From there on it went crazy. Like, every year we have more competitors, better competitors. And you see it in Red Hook Crit now, we have like 25 men from the Netherlands competing and 5 women. So, and the level is very high, and you see the Dutch riders competing at the top level of Red Hook Crit also. So that's really nice to see, because back then when we started the NL Crit Series, only a few riders were riding Red Hook Crit.
Mm-hmm.
And now we grew to 30 riders.
Yeah.
In the beginning it was really, a few people liked it very much, but a lot of people, especially from the traditional cycling events and union, and I thought, okay, these guys are crazy. What are they doing? What? We don't want to support you. We don't want to be involved in any of your events. Mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, okay, but it's like people ride bikes, only different bikes, but what could be against it? Because you involve riders who normally would not compete in any cycling races. Now they're competing in fixed gear races, and you attract more riders. So, but throughout the years, more acceptance is there, and we work together with some traditional cycling events in the Netherlands who came across us, and I thought, okay, this could be a very valuable addition to our program. And now we are racing with these big events, which attract thousands of spectators as well. And so in that case, you can more people can get to know fixed gear racing. More people get to know it, and that's very, very nice to see.
And do you think that fixed gear racing could possibly be the future of cycle racing overall?
I'm convinced of that, but it could also be you could also do the traditional cycling, like road cycling, on the fixed gear way, I think, like with short races, which are very attractive to watch for people, because I know a lot of cyclists are afraid to do fixed gear race, or they're not allowed from their team or so.
Talking about that as well, have you found that the riders doing your races, or if you had people want to do your races that aren't able to because their team doesn't let them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially guys and girls who are racing for UCI teams, mm-hmm. like Continental, Pro Continental. Yeah, those teams don't allow their riders to be involved in fixed gear racing. Now it's we have one Dutch rider. He's Ede Schelling. He's racing for SEC Racing Academy. That's a Continental Dutch team, and they really support him to do this because he really wanted it. He convinced them to do it, and now he's racing here at Red Hook Crit Milano, qualified second, which is very interesting. And I think when more people like him are allowed to do it, and more teams see the value of fixed gear racing, it could be a very interesting. It could be a very interesting step to the future.
Hi, I'm Ede Schelling. I'm racing for SEC Racing. Normally, we don't. Our team doesn't do fixed gear racing, but at the beginning of the year, I said to the team leader, like, "Hey, how would you like it if I do some fixed criteriums for the team, so in team colors on team bike?" And he was first like, "I don't know." And then I tried to convince him a little bit with like, it's not that dangerous. I mean, no one's with brakes at all. And after a while, he was convinced and. It's a pretty open-minded team, so that's really nice.
How has that helped your road racing, doing the fixed gear crits? Do you feel that it's had an influence on it? Or?
Well, maybe not yet, that directly yet, because I only did two yet, but I feel like it's taking the cornering skills up. You're here to race, of course, but all the extras which this race is bringing, like good fun and nice people around everywhere.
And then back to the racing today, you've just qualified to go through to the final, and I believe you placed second.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
So your first time at Red Hook Crit, you've unsettled a few people already. How are you feeling about going into the final?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy and stoked to be in the second line in the final, so that's nice. We started off with a crash, which wasn't that nice. Someone literally crashed in my back wheel, and then I looked back and I saw no one, so it was a big power-up, and then I thought, okay, this is also Red Hook. So that wasn't the best way to get in, but after the restart, I had another good start and was quickly in the front, and it was all right.
You are listening to the cycling podcast No Breaks, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast No Breaks and for offering our listeners 25% off. Even for criteriums, especially when there are qualifying rounds, good fueling is vital. So to stock up on gels, bars and drinks, go to scienceandsport.com and enter the code SISCP25 at the checkout. That's SISCP25 for 25% off. Is it dangerous? So there are crashes, and obviously there are no breaks, as the title of this podcast suggests. did you see a lot of crashes and any serious injuries or
anything? I did see a lot of crashes. And I think it was sort of majority of reasons why it was. I mean, obviously the no breaks is
is the major part of it, but it's also because I think a lot of the time there is that massive mix of ability, and that mix of ability sometimes does cause those crashes. It's that inexperience of maybe not being in the bunch or not being able to react in time, but also not understanding the flow of the race or how the race should be ridden. So you have those mix of ability, and sometimes that's the thing that causes the crashes. Also on the day, it was pretty wet at the beginning, especially in the qualifying round, so I don't think people quite knew the tire pressures to run with and that kind of thing. So that all played into effect and probably caused a lot more crashes than there should have been. I think if you're out the way, you're in the top 20 like there is in any bike race, you would have stayed well clear of it. But I would say on the whole, there's probably majority more crashes than there would have been in a, say, normal crit race that you'd find in the States or the UK, that kind of thing.
All right, so I was in the first heat and everything was going pretty well. Lungs are always burning in these races. Like, your chest is always on fire. I was the last lap. Right after the big roundabout at the end, there's a little corner and then a left turn out to the final straight, the back straight. And I made a stupid move. I went on the inside of the corner when I knew I should have just been patient and held the wheel, but I didn't. And I knew before I went down that I was going to go down, but just slid out of it nice and easy. Broke a few spokes, but no bones.
It was really slippery and greasy, and on the first, they've restarted my race twice, and on the first corner, on the first time we started, there was somebody went up the inside and just took the whole field out, so that was great. Then I just like tried to keep cool because we were sitting on the line for like half an hour, and it was cold, it was raining, and yeah. But anyway, I was in like not the best position.
I mean, you don't care.
So then we started again. I moved up, and my front wheel slid out, and my rear wheel slid out. I hit the barrier and lost a load of positions because I like nearly crashed.
Finally, Calvert, what do you think, having been there, what can traditional cycling, by which I mean, you know, the sort of cycling you do generally, road racing and so on, what can it learn from this scene, do you think?
I think to really just be more open to change itself and to allow different people within the sport to come into it. I think traditional road cycling is often very closed off, sometimes a bit like an old boys club in terms of maybe it doesn't allow innovation or change to come through, and it really takes like a big maverick to switch it up, or someone to do something ridiculous for everyone to get on board rather than it being open in the first place. And to make it again more of a spectacle, I know it's been tried before or is being currently tried with different races and adding, for instance, gravel sections into races, and to doing things where new dynamics added into it. But in the same sense, what it could really learn is just to relax a bit more as well, and to not take itself too seriously. I think a lot of the athletes within the race are sort of treated like test tube athletes, where it's all about the numbers. It's become so mathematical that it's sort of taken away from the sport itself, whereas the racing in Red Hook purely is there for the racing, rather than it being for the numbers and seeing where you can push the boundaries and the limits. It's there to match yourself up against the other person and to go as far as you can go, rather than somebody else maybe pushing you and goading you on. So it's definitely more of like a personal exploration for the people riding it, culturally and sort of sport-wise as well.
It's a little bit different. It's kind of like the element of like a track sprint, been like coming a scratch race, last five laps are super on, and then you've got the corners and the technical skill involved. I love them medley, to be honest. Yeah, I like it so much more than normal road racing.
And the environment as well, do you find that, or the atmosphere just generally so much better?
It's
or
different. So much better.
So much better. Except for the crits in the US, they're getting more and more like this, where it's like lots of people hanging out, loud,
Yeah, same as UK, but yeah, this is the pinnacle right here. It's great. Everyone's just here having a good time. You see each other, you say hello, everyone's friendly. Cycling's stuck in the Stone Age. Tradition's killing it. And I think, yeah, what Red Hook have done well is they've like respected tradition and innovated on it. And it's like, it's doing great. It's like the UFC of cycling, man. Like, it's wicked.
This is the shittiest after party ever.
Yes, because it is making over already, and it's only 2 o'clock, and we want to make a party.
E passa de culo.
You know, in our current state of U.S. road cycling is not it's not in a good place right now. We're losing a lot of races. We're losing a lot of teams, and I think if you know there is more of this style of event and more of a event than just a bike race, I think more people would be interested, and it would grow the fan base, and it would also bring a lot more athletes into it. So, I mean, beyond the partying and all the friends, I think just like there's just a sense of like racing your track bike at night with, you know, all some amazing athletes that you just don't get anywhere else. You know, it's just such an amazing and insane feeling that, yeah, there's nothing else compares. And I think that's what keeps coming back. I'm generally like pretty scared, but it's a really kind of crazy edge that you just can't ever experience anywhere else.
I like this way more than the traditional racing. Traditional racing is, in my opinion, a bit too serious. And up here, everyone is just having fun, but also serious, I mean, in a different way. And that's what I like. Especially in these years, it's getting more and more serious. I mean, when I'm up the road with some boys with the national team from other teams, like Sinweb team, then I hear like, yeah, we have to take this at that time of the day, and then this and that. And like, dude, just do what you want and do what feels good when you do it. And not with all schedules, which your team is giving you. I mean, everybody can think for themselves. And I'm like, if you can't think for yourself, then you shouldn't be figure out yourself how to get things straight, and not by having your team told it.
Like the atmosphere is very different in here. I like it very much. Like people are cheering for each other. Although they're riding for another team, let's say, but people are more laid back and not so normal traditional cycling, let's say, is really more like on their own. People are more on their own. And that's here, it's completely the other way around. So that's what I like very much about Fixgear, besides the racing and the other stuff, but that's the thing I really like. Yeah.
And the traditional cycling is a little bit old. But yeah, so yeah, it's really a new way of cycling, actually, and much more fun.
People need to stop taking themselves too serious. At the end of the day, we're just riding bikes, and you know, it's about forging friendships and relationships with other people that ride bikes. I think that's the most important thing. I think, you know, in any walk of life, you're always going to get people with egos, and you're always going to get people that kind of goes to their head. You know, this race, it's just a fixed gear race or track bike race. It's a lot of fun, and that's what it's about. I think, that's essentially what it's about.
Pro cycling needs to learn a lot about this race.
Yeah.
And also the people who race. We are amateurs. We are not pro cyclists. People come from pro cycling to race this. It's like, what the fuck? It's like, something is attractive. Something is getting so attractive to the people that everybody wants to come. So I think like in all the single points of this type of race organization, the power that it has, like the guy who's speaking in the microphone, like Gabe, like everything just together makes like this insane race to learn about.
I think as the social media side and like the race coverage side, yes, because there's a lot of like hype and like the way there's the races are filmed and stuff with onboard cameras and like, yeah, I think that can be incorporated a lot more into like professional road cycling. I think you're much like, if you're watching the race, you're much more involved in the race rather than just sitting on the side watching a load of riders go past. You can actually go speak to someone and say, hey, how was it like to race, or like, how was your race?
Here it goes, it is people.
Yeah, so within the top three, we had, within the men's race, we had two Italians on the podium with Filippo Fortin, then Jesus Alberto from Spain, and Michael Capati from Italy as well. It was quite a shock result for the men's race, because I think Specialized Rocket Espresso really set out to go in hard at this race, but the closest, or the highest placed finisher they had was Eamon Lucas, who we spoke to within the podcast as well, and he placed 16th. So it was interesting to see how that all played out. Also, Ida Schellen, who it was his first time in Red Hook, and maybe, and I think he said his third crit race possibly, fixed gear crit race, he ended up placing 5th. So the talent really shone through with his place in there. For the women's results, we had Rachele Barbieri, Barbara Gasciari, and Nira Nuno. The first two there were Italian. Within those results, I think it was expected that possibly Rachele would be placing highly, but I don't think she was expected as the winner of the race, with the eyes on Raphael Lemieux from Specialized Rocket Espresso, who is predicted to be one of the favourites for the race. So I think within those results, we saw a lot of them, or a lot of non-favourites sort of come into the fore there. And that was either because of the level of the race has stepped up and there was a different dynamic within it, and the speed definitely within the final played an effect.
Kira, how are you today? Welcome to Milan.
You're just joining us back. I'm here with Kira, back in Milan, my old housemate. Let's see what she's got to say.
So we're live and direct, just after the final. You're about to pour out some beer. Is it all gone? All done. But you've just been in the final. You've just got pulled, unfortunately, despite your best efforts.
Yeah, I think essentially my lack of a good heat meant that I was, probably compared to normal, about 10 places further back. So I think that had I not had a bad heat, I might have finished the race. But the people in front of this race are world class. You got Rachele Barbieri, world champion on the track. I'm pretty sure Raph Lemieux is one of you. She has been a pro on the road, so
it's not messing about. So since your first ever one and now coming to this one, the level's gone up tenfold.
My first ever one when I was 18, I came ninth.
Yeah.
And I was much worse then. much worse, I mean, I'm not in my best form now, I know that myself, but I'm still fairly fit. I'm pretty much a full-time cyclist. And they're asking, oh my God!
So much excitement, so much the whole way around the course, and this is what it's all about: the entertainment, the noise, the value, the lot, the full shebang, and that's definitely what Red Hook's all about. Still buzzing.
My heart is going so fast. I've been trying to film the finish. This has been the Cycling Podcast, Cycling No Breaks Podcast, with Calvert and Kira signing off. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
You're going to give us a boop then.
You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast, No Breaks. We'd like to say a big thanks to Calvert Churchill and Kira McVitie for coming up with this idea and putting it all together. As we said at the start, Kira and Calvert have been keeping a series of excellent audio diaries this year, and these are available to friends of the podcast. There's still a final installment to come next week. Become a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. And if you'd like to see some of the Red Hook action, then I can highly recommend Kira's YouTube channel. There's a great little film she made in Milan and an earlier one from Brooklyn from earlier this year, which has done extremely well. Search for Kira McVitie, that's KeiraMcVitty on YouTube. Thanks too to our sponsors Rafa and Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. And finally, thanks to Tom Wally, who produced this episode.